When does that happen?
To start? We're all set.
Council is back in session. We have one item before us, and I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner. Oh, wait. We don't have to do roll again, right?
We do.
Oh, Carla, will you please take the roll?
Saltzman?
Here.
Fritz? Fish?
Here.
Wheeler? Udaly?
Here. Commissioner Saltzman. I mean, Commissioner Fish.
That's the final straw. So could you read the item?
Yes, item 827.
I need a nap.
827, direct the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Bureau of Environmental Services, and Prosper Portland to evaluate development of a brownfield redevelopment tax incentive that benefits the City of Portland.
Well, thank you, Madam President and colleagues. Today, I'm pleased to introduce a resolution directing the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the Bureau of Environmental Services, and Prosper Portland to develop a new tool to help clean up brownfields and put them back to work. In 2016, the legislature authorized local governments to establish property tax incentives for brownfield cleanups. We are honored to have one of the state Senate's champions with us here today, Senator Lou Frederick. Lou, welcome. Portland has approximately 910 acres of brownfields, contributing little or nothing in terms of property taxes, jobs, or productive use. As my colleagues know, the city's new comprehensive plan specifically calls for reinvesting in brownfields as a guiding principle for economic prosperity, which includes 600 acres of contaminated brownfields in industrial areas. The resolution today builds on years of hard work by the Metro-led Oregon Brownfields Coalition, with broad support from diverse stakeholders, including Thousand Friends of Oregon, the League of Oregon Cities, Northwest Environmental Business Council, Verde, and the Portland Business Alliance, among many others. Now, similar tax incentives have been successful in other states. Portland is poised to be the first jurisdiction in Oregon to take advantage of this new opportunity. Here's some additional brownfield facts. And I would note that one of our guests today was tweeting quite a bit and put out these facts ahead of the hearing, and I was pleased that she did so, our friend from the county. Brownfields are three times as likely to be located in underserved communities, and approximately 50% of reported brownfields are within 1,000 feet of environmentally sensitive areas such as wetlands and streams. Now, we know that cleaning up brownfields creates jobs, generates tax revenue, protects our environment, and helps address disparities in our community. As you will hear in today's presentation, parties who cause the contamination or who are responsible for Superfund cleanup are not eligible for these tax incentives. Furthermore, the incentives are designed to reward community benefits, such as affordable housing, redevelopment in high-poverty areas, and equitable contracting. We know that no one tool is going to clean up Portland's brownfields, but a property tax incentive, properly used, will help us move the one step closer. Now, I want to introduce our all-star panels today. We have two, and the first up, we're joined by Kimberly Branham, Executive Director of Prosper Portland, formerly known as the Portland Development Commission, Andy Reed, Project Manager of Prosper Portland, and Jen Bildersee of the Bureau of Environmental Services. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you. Kimberly's going to start us off.
So I'm just going to kick it off and mention that with the passage of this House bill, we really do have a new important opportunity to build a program with economic, environmental, and social equity impact. It's an important tool, and it feels like partnership is central to this. Not only did the bill have bipartisan support at the state, we've been working with fantastic partners to think about the next steps and how we implement that. So I wanted to mention and thank those partners before handing it over to Andy and Jen. But first, I wanted to just draw two examples of where we know this can work. These are both central potential city examples, and we hope that this tool will help us have exemplary projects in East Portland and industrial areas. But the South Waterfront Central District and North District, both there were 90 acres, it's hard to imagine, but there were 90 acres of highly contaminated brownfields. And as a result of the cleanup work through public-private partnership, we've seen more than $1.5 billion of private investment, thousands of permanent jobs, housing, vibrant neighborhoods, infrastructure. And so this is the kind of partnership that we would like to see moving forward, as Commissioner Fish mentioned. And so really what I wanted to do was to say thank you both for your leadership, Commissioner Fish, and to the working group that's developed the concept. So both Jen and Andy, but also Tom Armstrong from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Nancy Klinger, Matt Hoffman from Multnomah County, Emerald Bogue, and Lise Glancy from the Port of Portland. We also had additional support with research from the coalition. So Steve Kuntz and Tyler Bump, Ashley Carter for the City of Portland. And we also had great support from our colleagues in the Office of Government Relations. So Dan Eisenbeis and Elizabeth Edwards are to be commended. So thank you. And with that, I'll turn it over to Andy.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you, commissioners, for your time. Today, Jen and I are going to go through a couple of things. One, really just kind of set up what the action is today. Two, share how we got to this point and describe what the case is for taking action now, and three, to discuss what a local brownfield incentive program could look like. So as previously shared, this is the action we're asking you to take. Just to be clear, this is not in creating the incentive program, but instead it's giving us a year to continue to analyze the program further and refine the concept. And this creates the space for us to write the code and, you know, have the time to do that well, but also put the parameters around a program and what that might look like. So we've heard some of the statistics come out already, and as you can see here, there are a lot of areas that this kind of goes into in terms of how it impacts our city. And just as a kind of side note, Tyler Bump and Nancy Klinger are here today if there are technical questions about how this all works with our various plans. So the case for action from our standpoint is pretty clear. There are 900 acres ready to be redeveloped, but for having a tool to do it. And when the total cleanup does occur, we'll see an estimated $240 million in cost. So we have sites that are upside down that are ready to go, but for the cost of doing the cleanup, they're not occurring. So doing this will allow us to continue our economic development within the urban growth boundary on land that, in spite of our booming economy, is not converting to development at this point. And moreover, this effort is a key strategy to meet our social, environmental, and economic goals.
Good afternoon. I'm Jen Bildersee. I coordinate the Brownfield Program at the Bureau of Environmental Services, and I'm going to pick up the story where Andy left off to give you a little bit of context about how we got there, because it's really shaped the proposal that we brought today. So in response to the Brownfield Program, the Brownfield problem that Kimberly and Andy have outlined, in 2014, Metro really took a leadership role in convening an coalition of partners, the Oregon Brownfield Coalition, to start to discuss statewide solutions to addressing brownfields. It's an extremely broad opt-in coalition. It's had over 50 partners, and we've been meeting very actively for the past 3 years. And the main role has been to identify, to shape, and to advocate for new tools to address brownfields in the state of Oregon. The City of Portland's been an active participant in this coalition since the very first meeting. Early on in our coalition meetings, we identified our top priorities for the tools we thought would be the most useful to pursue. And a brownfield property tax incentive rose to the top of the list pretty quickly, mostly because it's been a very successful tool in several other states. Independent of the coalition's work, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability conducted some research in 2012 on the brownfield situation and landscape in Portland, and also identified the same tool as one that would be useful here and a very good match for Portland's brownfields. So with the coalition's support, this concept for a brownfield property tax incentive became House Bill 4084, authorizing local governments to provide property tax incentive programs. So again, the state legislation did not create the tax incentive program. What it did was it created the opportunity for local jurisdictions to shape their own programs. And certain aspects of the programs were dictated by the state legislation. For example, the fact that the polluter pays, so a responsible party who contaminated a property would not be eligible for this incentive. That's within the state legislation. But the legislation also allows local jurisdictions to really tailor the program to fit the particular needs and priorities of the local context. After this opportunity became available last year, the City of Portland and a number of partners, Port of Portland, Multnomah County, began meeting regularly to take a look at what a successful program here in Portland would look like. And so what we've brought today is really an outline that was built on the years of work at the Coalition and the proposals that the Coalition put forward, and also this additional year of work that the working group here at the City has done to look at how could it be further shaped to Portland's unique circumstances. So on this slide, you can see that the general concept is that a property where brownfield contamination is cleaned up, 50% of the cost of eligible cleanup activities could be deducted from future property taxes over a set period of time. Additionally, if a property and a project fit certain priority categories for the City of Portland, for example, affordable housing, equitable contracting, then additional incentives to the amount of 25% of the cleanup for each of those categories could be added to the incentive, and that would cap out at 100%. So Andy's actually going to walk through a specific example. Before we do that, I do want to recognize that just so many partners who are part of the Coalition are here in the room today, and Kimberly named many of them. Additionally, Senator Frederick has been an early champion of statewide legislation and brownfield efforts, and we're all very thankful for that. It's really what's allowed us to get to this point.
Great. Thank you, Jen. So here's a sample incentive structure. Again, we're still conceptualizing what this could look like, but this has garnered some strong support from those that have been working on this as a concept. So as Commissioner Fish already mentioned, not eligible would be site owners that are causing contamination. So you do not get to use the program if you are the contributor of the contamination. Second, cost connected to Superfund responses also are not eligible under the law. But again, as we've conceptualized here, we're looking at a 50% tax exemption on a market rate development, and then additional percentages, 25 to 50%, can get applied for priorities such as affordable housing, MWESB contracting, and location in or near low-income areas, things like that. So again, we've discussed these throughout the presentation. We have economic, social, and environmental impacts by implementing a program like this. It really does have potential to do all three of those at the same time. We could see redevelopment. If all the brownfields redeveloped, we could look at 31,000 new jobs in our area just on the brownfields alone, with another $40 million in additional revenue to our jurisdictions. These sites are located in our most underserved communities, and cleanup can help protect surface water by reducing non-point source pollution. So there are a lot of areas where this can be a strong benefit to us.
We have a panel that's going to come up and speak, a number of real champions for brownfields in our communities. The panel will be Metro Councilor Sam Chase, Multnomah County Commissioner Jessica Vega Peterson, and State Senator Lou Frederick. But we're happy to answer any questions you have about the proposal at this time.
Colleagues?
I want to compliment you on that infographic, a screen or two back.
Karen Martinek at the Bureau of Environmental Services is a real magic maker with those.
I'm going to try to steal her. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. And we're very pleased to welcome Lou Frederick, Jessica Vega Peterson, and Sam Chase. And I believe Senator Frederick is the most senior member of this all-star panel. And Lou, you started this a long time ago. Amira might even have been working with you when you started on this, but on behalf of the city, thank you for being a champion on this issue. And we understand there's a lot of there's a lot of brownfields in your district, and so this is an issue you care about both as a matter of principle and as a representative of the interests of your district. But you have been our champion, and so thank you for that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm Senator Lou Frederick. I'm supposed to introduce every time at the legislature, so I do that. District 22, that's north and northeast Portland.
North and northeast Portland. Thank you. It is also a neighbor situation for me. The reason, one of the main reasons that I started this was because I there was a gas station grocery store that sat empty for 30 years, a block and a half away from my house. And it just, I knew why it was empty because the fellow who was the mechanic there, I used to take my VW bus there, and I went to pick up the bus one day, and I was in the backyard, and the guy came out of the shop with a bucket of liquid, and he proceeded to pour it onto the ground. And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Just pouring this solvent. It cleaned up the carburetors." And I said, "You can't do that." He said, "I've been doing it for years. What are you talking about?" And that's when I stopped going to that particular spot because of that. But a few months later, they completely closed down the shop itself. I'm sure it wasn't just because I wasn't going anymore. I realized that was one of the reasons that sat empty for 30 years was because it had been a brownfield identified as one. And in fact, when I went to the legislature, one of my first bills in 2011 was dealing with brownfields. And so we asked the DEQ to take a look at the brownfields in my district and then in the other districts around the state. I had 147. And they were very simply easily identified in some ways. They were the old gas stations, used to be on every third corner or so. There were the dry cleaners shops. There were the photo shops. There were battery companies. And then they looked around the state and they found out that they were the farm implement and farm supply places that were also contaminated sites. And everyone, every legislator that I talked with knew exactly where they were. They had seen them. They just didn't know what to do about them. So we began a process to try to get those cleaned up. First, we needed to get the DEQ to be able to identify them and identify what the problems were. We did that and say that once they found that out, that they were no longer liable for anything new that might happen. And then we began this process. And the city, somebody's already mentioned Dan Eisenbeis and Elizabeth Edwards, but you had a governmental affairs group that was very helpful. The Port of Portland got involved. The Association of Oregon Counties. The list that you saw there of people who were saying, look, we know we have untapped resources, important untapped resources. Now, when I'm usually talking about important untapped resources, I'm talking about people. In this situation, we really are going down to earth. This is untapped resources that we could be using, that people could be using. And I hope at some point to include additional incentives. I'd like to see when there are jobs created on those brownfields that we actually have some kind of a tax incentive there for them as well. That's a little difficult when our budget is the way it is. You mentioned a tax cut of some form, and that does not hit well with my fellow members of the Ways and Means Committee. So, but I think that may be another way to do it, because 31,000 new jobs is great. More housing is great. And this particular proposal is outstanding, because we really are going to see some things take place. This does not come about because everyone just decided, one group decided to do it. It was the Senate, it was the state, it was the city, it was the county, all of these folks working together. And it was bipartisan because everyone knew about those empty sites sitting there empty, and we needed to do something about that. What I am very pleased about this is, in particular, is that it's predictable. everyone has a sense of what is needed and how it's done. And I congratulate you for this particular proposal, all of you. This is the kind of thing that we need to see happening, because many people do not understand the kind of connections and the procedures and the process that's involved. But when you have something like this that is very out, very clear and predictable, we actually get something done for the people of Portland and the state of Oregon. So thank you again.
Lou, can I also extend our thanks for the work that you did in the legislature that resulted in $8 million in the governor's budget for Superfund? And $5 million of that is available in the short term, $8 million over the 2 years. And that's critically important as we partner with DEQ, the port, some of the PRPs, and want to move this process forward. The state having some skin in the game was very important. And I know you had very tough choices to make, but we appreciate that money making its way into the final budget.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad that we were able to get something accomplished. And I also have to say as well that one of the reasons this can't manage to come through is because of my former chief of staff. Sue Hagmeier was very heavily involved in making sure that this started, that this worked. She would be very pleased. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is our newest county commissioner, Jessica Vega Peterson. And it turns out that in this context, she may be the most important person in the decision-making tree going forward, because not only is the county our key partner, but as a practical matter, the county has to concur in any tax abatement, and the county assessor has to agree to actually take the property off the roll. So you could say Jessica has all the cards on this one. So, welcome to City Council, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Well, it was very smart of you to invite me then. So good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you so much for having me here today, and especially Commissioner Fish for your leadership on this such an important issue. I also have the habit of announcing, like stating my name for the record. So I'm Jessica Vega Peterson. I'm the Multnomah County Commissioner for District 3, which includes much of the southeast and east portions of the city of Portland. So to state the obvious, place matters. Our natural and built environments have an enormous impact on the health of our communities. Fresh air, clean water, walkable environments are all to our benefit. Yet air pollutants, contaminated water and soil, or poorly planned communities are to our detriment. And brownfields are a combination of these threats and often reinforce the negative stereotypes of blight and disinvestment in many of our communities. These properties typically housed a former industrial or commercial use, and now future use is affected by real or perceived environmental contamination. You cited some statistics earlier, Commissioner, for the city of Portland. For the city, for the county of Multnomah, brownfield sites are scattered throughout Multnomah County and cover an estimated 6,300 acres of land. So that's almost 10 square miles of land within our county borders. These brownfield sites are both an environmental and an environmental justice issue. Brownfields are three times as likely to be located in underserved communities, and approximately 50% of the total and reported brownfields are in or within 1,000 feet of environmentally sensitive areas such as wetlands and streams. That's why the action you're taking today is so important to the health of our communities. Thoughtful design, cleanup, and redevelopment of brownfield sites can be beneficial to the community's health in a number of ways. Such infill development can help reduce the need for sprawl. And I look at the three of you who have championed the housing issue so strongly. You know that the population of the Portland area is rapidly increasing, and that with our community valuing rural land, forests, and open space, brownfield sites are becoming increasingly valuable as opportunities for infill development. Cleanup and redevelopment can also reduce or eliminate groundwater and soil contamination and provide an opportunity to knit back together communities that have been divided or blighted by such sites. And I'm here today to advocate that equity should be a strong component of any proposed programs. As you may know, the Multnomah County Commission also wears the hat of the local public health board. And because of this, I would ask that health and equity are considered when selecting and redeveloping brownfield sites. We should focus on site redevelopments that support the health of the community and ensure that the benefits of growth are shared equitably. Maps created by the Multnomah County Environmental Health Division found that parts of North and Northeast Portland, the Cully neighborhood and Columbia River corridor, and a large area of East Portland exhibit high health inequity and therefore high need. Compounded by gentrification, we know that these same areas exhibit increasingly concentrated poverty. These findings support brownfield cleanup and redevelopment efforts that emphasize community benefits and prioritize areas of health inequity from both a racial justice and health equity perspective. Legislation that my former colleague, Senator Frederick, championed, and which was I was proud to vote for as the state legislature, that the city will make use of, is structured to incentivize cleanup and meaningful development in areas that experience high poverty rates, affordable housing shortages, and disproportionate environmental impacts. This local authority will allow you to use this property tax incentive tool to benefit our most vulnerable communities and highest risk areas. I support the city's plan to study this issue and the policy options granted by the legislature to incentivize the cleanup of these areas. And it should be noted that local jurisdictions do have control over the program's specifics. So you can choose to require public health and community-based benefits such as affordable housing requirements, MWESB contracting, and clean fuels contracting for cleanup activities, and I would encourage you to do so. Remediation and meaningful development will help bring brownfield sites back into productive use and back on the tax roll. The cleanup of these sites will also remove environmental threats and help improve our built environment, particularly for our most at-risk communities. I strongly support your efforts to further study and craft effective and equitable policies and look forward to working with you on this issue. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify here today and for your focus on such an important issue for our community.
Thank Commissioner, thank you very much for your outstanding testimony. Next up is Metro Councilor Sam Chase. Sam is too modest to mention this, so I will. In a prior life, Sam was the architect of what later became known as the 30% set-aside, which mandates that 30%, now more, thanks to some changes we adopted in the last 2 years, but a minimum of 30% of urban renewal funds go to affordable housing. Also, a little known fact is that there was actually some pushback in City Hall when he came and lobbied for that. But he persevered, and we're still in a housing crisis, but I can't imagine where we would be today if we didn't have that tool all these many years to invest in affordable housing. So thank you, Sam, and welcome to City Hall.
Thank you, and I thought you might say I was too modest to mention that I'm a former chief of staff for our city commissioner here.
I wasn't going to mention that because you've taken it off your resume because you've now reached greater heights. So
it's such
I wanted
a big
to
accomplishment. It wouldn't be, you know. So, I thank you. Again, Sam Chase, Metro Council. My district is roughly downtown Portland, northwest, northeast, North Portland, and a little bit of Washington County. And, you know, there's an old adage that it's all been said, but not everybody said it. So I will simply echo the really articulate comments that have already been made around the brownfields program. And I will say this. As a Metro Councilor, I'm really focused on how our region is growing and developing. And we are doing very well. And we have a lot to worry about, but we're doing very well. We have a very resilient economy, a strong economy. We have a quality of life that people around the world want to be a part of. And we also have a lot of people who don't have access to that quality of life and don't have access to that job, to those jobs. And I think that is our biggest challenge, is to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to succeed in our region. And, you often hear me really focused on affordable housing and equitable jobs and jobs for underserved communities. Well, brownfields are a part of that equation because that is something that we have left in the hands of lower income communities, and we have not taken care of. We have not done our job on cleaning up those brownfields and making those really fabulous places to serve our community. So I thank you so much for taking this on and tackling this issue. I think it's another show of your commitment to us growing as a responsible region that is still far from successful in serving all of our residents, but striving to find those ways to help everyone succeed in. I will add, you know, one other small piece that I've really observed about brownfields and around the industrial land component is I look at a lot of the assessments around industrial land needs, regional, and we have some land available in the outer areas of our region, and we have some modest amounts of land here in the inner areas of our region. Far and away, when businesses are looking to locate here, when they are looking to grow here, far and away, they want to live close. They want to be located close in. The quality of life that we can offer in our inner urban areas is a huge driver. And so when we clean up brownfields, when we create those industrial areas that are available along our Willamette River and in our inner communities, that really helps drive our job growth as well.
Sam, I have a question for you or any of the panelists, and that is when I met with Jen to go over this presentation and we looked at the composition of the Oregon Brownfields Coalition that Metro led, it's a remarkably diverse group of stakeholders, and there have been some real serious fault lines among some of those stakeholders. I mean, there's been big battles statewide among some of the participants. And yet somehow this coalition came together around this idea, and then ultimately it got unanimous support in the legislature, which doesn't happen all the time. What was the dynamic that was different here that you think led to that kind of consensus?
Well, I'm gonna hand that one over to the folks that were down in the legislature really engaging with that. But I will say, you know, and I can't speak to others' interests. I think people have different interests. But, you know, I think that the folks who have the kinds of interests that are here at the table are sometimes the folks that are kind of skeptical about looking at, you know, tax incentives and really do a lot of due diligence. And I think once you really look at the numbers on this, once you really do the evaluation, you realize this is the kind of strategy we have to have in place to really once and for all get this done. So that's what I would add. But then I would turn it over to our legislators and former legislators.
Well, thank you. I guess I go a little philosophical on this. There's no power dynamic here. This is something that all Oregonians can understand, and they're affected by it. As I mentioned, some of the legislators that were involved, once we showed them that they had 150 brownfields in their district and they could identify several of them right away, they wanted to get something done there too. And whether that was a farm implement supply dealer in Burns, or someone who was in, you know, somewhere down in Coos Bay, they understood that they could see that right away. So there was no power dynamic here. This was just simply, let's see what we can do to get something going for Oregon. And every district has a concern about jobs, about the use of untapped resources, as I said before. And so there was pretty straightforward. There wasn't a lot to do except, I mean, there were people who were suspicious of other people, which is what always happens. But that we even broke through that because everyone understood this was something everyone could be part of.
And I have to, again, commend my former colleague, because the reason that people knew that they may have had 155 brownfield sites is that every single legislator in the building got a map of the district that they represented with all of the different brownfield locations. So you could see in black and white right in front of you what the impact was for your community and the people you were representing. And that was something that we received from his office, and that was a very powerful tool in making that connection, bringing it down to a personal level, and making people realize that this is something that it's not a Portland problem, it's an Oregon problem that we need to impact.
Well, that's great, and it's very inspiring. I'd like to acknowledge while you're here that we did get a letter from the port, from Curtis Robinhold, never heard of him. It's a letter in strong support of what we're doing. Emerald Bogue is here. Emerald, thank you for arranging this letter, and that letter will be made part of the record. Questions, colleagues?
Well, thanks to the panelists and for the presentation. I'm really excited about this. I'd heard tale of these 900 acres, and I'm excited to see the map of Portland for sure. My biggest question is, do we yet have a sense of what percentage of these brownfields may be appropriate for housing development? Because, of course, that's my priority.
I don't have those numbers because I've been dealing with it in a different way, but I wouldn't be surprised if someone has at least mapped out a few things there. You know, to some extent, be careful what you wish for. The brownfield that I mentioned that prompted my thing being housing development, high-end housing development, and it was also supposed to be taller than it is now, so it created its own set of problems. But there are a lot of places like that scattered throughout the neighborhood and throughout the community.
And I think, I don't know if somebody in the room can answer that question, but one of the things that I like about, you know, the ideas that they're talking about is that there's incentive for doing affordable housing development with these properties. And that's, you know, again, we want to incent the good behavior on that. So I'm, like you, you know, hopeful that we'll see a lot of good development coming out of this.
And I did see that the incentives for affordable housing development don't differ between using NW ESB and not using, because the cap is at 100% of the cost. In that infographic, that's what it looked like.
Yeah. You know, there are some interesting things, and I think that's part of the whole study thing. I think that we need to look at that and see just what sort of impact that does have. I hope that's the plan.
I see someone back there that has something to say about that. You'd have to come to the...
Thank you.
Thank you to our panel.
So what the infographic showed is that for each category of the five, you would receive an additional 25%. So if, for example, it was an affordable housing development that also used equitable contracting, that would receive both additional 25%. It's just if you hit more than two categories. Mm-hmm. So if you use equitable contracting and affordable housing and you're in the high poverty area, as we end up defining that, you would still cap out at the 100% because the recommendation was that, and the state legislation carried forward, was that no one should receive more than 100% of what they actually spend on the brownfield cleanup.
Okay. And we'll have a chance as a council to further discuss that when the recommendations come back, correct?
Yes. And then Tyler Bump from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is here and can speak to your earlier question about the acreage for housing.
Yeah. So of the 910-acre brownfield inventory that we have in the city, about 35% of that is in areas that is zoned for multifamily or mixed-use development, so a significant amount of land that could be developed for housing. Uh-huh. Of course, that depends on the location, whether or not it's appropriate for that level of housing or density of housing. What we've done with the map itself is we have a map that's very accessible that we've developed at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability that's on Portland Maps. So if you go to portlandmaps.com/BPS/brownfields, there's an interactive map where you can see where all the sites are and click and see the DEQ site information that links to the property tax assessment website as well.
That's great.
Great. Thank you. All right. Carla, do we have any public testimony?
No one else signed up.
Great. So this is a first reading.
Is this an order?
I think it's a
resolution.
Resolution.
Yeah.
Right. But last time, I mean, we move it, right?
No, we get to vote on that
resolution. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're finding this so amusing, Nick. All right. So, Carl, will you please take the roll?
Saltzman?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for bringing this forward to Senator Frederick, Metro Councilor Sam Chase, Commissioner Vega Peterson, and all the other parties, Port of Portland, and everybody else that helped bring this to reality. It looks like a great tool and to deal with a very thorny issue that has so far not been subject to very elegant solutions. And I hope this is one of them that will really put a lot of this property into productive use, particularly in our more distressed areas of our city. So I'm very hopeful this will work. The art of the deal still needs to be crafted here in terms of what we will do locally, but thanks to the state for giving us this tool to do something locally. Aye.
Fish?
I just want to make one comment about President Yu Daley and her stewardship of our meetings. She is a no-nonsense council presiding officer. We got done today before 11 o'clock this morning. This hearing has gone off flawlessly. When the mayor comes back, there may be a council coup to keep keep the gavel in you-know-who's hands. So thank you for your excellent stewardship of our meetings. This is a very proud day, and I don't want to repeat all the thank yous, but I will. I want to thank all the bureaus that have been involved, Prosper Portland, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and, of course, the bureau that I have the great honor of leading, the Bureau of Environmental Services, and Jen Bildersee. Thank you for your great work, and thank you for your ongoing leadership on this. Kimberly Branham, Andy Reid, thank you very much. To the Port, Emerald Bogue, and our partners, thank you for joining us. To the three elected officials who came today, Senator Frederick, we can't thank you enough, and I'm glad that you invoked Sue's name. It's appropriate in this setting because she was your key partner in getting this done, and we're thankful to her for her service. To Sam Chase, I'm glad to see that your experience in City Hall did not hold you back and that you've gone on to Sam was once at a public gathering and was explaining to people how local government works because it's very confusing. He said, here's the shorthand. He said, if you just think about it hierarchically, there's Metro, there's the county, and there's the city. So that's apparently that's the view from Metro. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I appreciate
it. It was really for your benefit.
I appreciate the moxie. Commissioner Jessica Vega Peterson, it is our great good fortune that you have migrated from the state legislature to the county commission, and we thank you for your partnership, and we look forward to implementing this with your full partnership. I think we should do a shout-out, Sam, to all the different organizations that participated in the Metro-led Oregon Brownfields Coalition. It is not the case that if you put all these kinds of diverse groups together, you always get to an outcome. In fact, I fear increasingly we're getting good at getting to know in some of our big public policy debates. This is a conspicuous success, and so we thank all the folks who took time to get it right. Within the next year, we'll have a new tool. It's been made clear to us that this tool alone will not leverage all that we need to do, so we'll be looking for other tools. One thing I like about this tool is that there's always been some skepticism about tax abatements and tax incentives because people have always wondered, does it really meet the test of but for this expenditure, this foregone revenue, something that otherwise wouldn't happen happens? And in some of our programs, frankly, it's getting harder and harder to make the case that but for. It's an incentive, but it may not be the critical reason why something happens. What we know here is that but for this kind of incentive, people are not going to develop the land, and so we have a choice. It can sit unproductive, generating very little in the way of tax revenue and jobs, or we can make this investment out of the increased value of the land and give a little bit back in order to create an incentive. So to me, that's very smart public policy. Thank you to everyone who has brought us to this moment, and I'm very proud to vote aye.
Yu Daley.
Thank you, everyone, for being here and for bearing with me. I'm so excited about this as an advocate for affordable housing because what we hear over and over again from developers is that land is too expensive and there's nowhere to build. And when I mentioned this 900 acres to a certain renowned developer in town, his eyes lit up like it was Christmas. So I'm going to be especially interested in how we can most strongly incentivize affordable housing. And it seems clear to me that the benefit of doing this versus the cost of doing nothing is going to be a huge win for the city and for the region. So thanks for all your hard work.
Madam President, before you gavel us at the end of the meeting, can I just say I committed a faux pas. I did not acknowledge Amira Streeter, who is in charge of community development in my office, and Todd Lofgren, who is the liaison to the BES. And thanks to both of them for their great work. Thank you.
Are you done salting my game today, Commissioner Fish?
Yeah.
The resolution is passed, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.